News Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, coming to you each and every Sunday afternoon here on KMJ and KMJ580.com worldwide. A very entertaining program for you on tap today with Lloyd Evans of Madera. A couple things I want to mention to you before we get into Lloyd's story. Don't forget the Veterans Day Parade in downtown Fresno coming up on Veterans Day. That's 11-11 at 11 a.m., of course. That's Tuesday morning in downtown Fresno, the biggest Veterans Day Parade on the West Coast. So you better be there. If not, you can watch it on TV. And later that day at 2 o'clock at the Clovis Veterans Memorial Building, the Veterans Voices premiere, some mini-documentaries put together by local volunteers on veterans from around the valley. You won't want to miss that either. 2 o'clock on 11-11. That's November 11th, Tuesday at 2 o'clock at the Clovis Veterans Memorial Building. Tomorrow at R.J. Nutra Elementary in Lemoore, a big Veterans Day celebration. I'll be down there with a bunch of local veterans and some elementary school students. And also a fundraiser coming up with the Fresno Falcons at Celland Arena on Friday night, Veterans Night at the Rink. We're going to tell you more about that before the program is over. Right now, though, I want to welcome on my guest today, 87-year-old Lloyd Evans of Madera, of the 89th Infantry Division in World War II. Lloyd, thanks so much for being here today, and I want to start with you where I start with all the veterans. What do you remember about December 7th, 1941, when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor? Where were you when you first heard about that, and what do you remember about hearing that news?
I remember, Paul, I was working on the farm out west of Madera, and we received news that the Pearl Harbor had been bombed. That night, I was on my way to welding school. I was taking a course in welding in Madera, so a group of us gathered together that night and discussed the situation that we were in and that our country had been bombed and we would probably be going into the service fighting for our country, as the group I was with were all young men.
You were 20 years old at the time?
I was 20 at the time, yes. And so that's when I heard about it, the day that it happened. We were all saddened, of course, because our country had been invaded, bombed, and it was a real shock to us.
And you knew right away that your life was going to change, that you were going to have to serve.
We all felt that we would be changing our life, yes. That we would be going into the service of some department, either Army, Navy, or Marines, or whatever. But we knew it was going to change, yes.
And how long was it from then until Uncle Sam sent you a letter in the mail and said, I want you?
Well, this was December 7, 41, and in August of 42, I received a letter that I would be drafted. Greetings from the president. And I was drafted the 26th day of August, 1942.
So you're in the Army now?
Yes, I was in the Army now.
What was your welcome to the Army moment? Did you anticipate everything that you would experience, or were there a few things that were a bit of a shock to your system and a, wow, this isn't really a whole lot of fun?
Well, being a country farm boy, of course, always raised on a farm, anything was a change. But the first thing they did, they loaded us on the bus and sent us to Sacramento for our physical. So that was something different, too. All of we guys taking our physical together. And they brought us back home, brought back down to Madera, and gave us a 14-day furlough, which was another shock. What does a 21-year-old fellow want with a 14-day furlough, you know? What's he going to do? I was playing in a country western band for square dances, so I think we played a couple square dances during that time. And then I was sent over to Fort Ord for all my shots, my injections and all that, our medical things. And that was also a shock. A lot of different things we had to do.
And all you had known for quite a while was the farm. You didn't go to high school because you were working on the farm.
That's right, working on the farm and helping my family.
Was it a sacrifice for your family to have you gone and in the service? Did work on the farm suffer because of your absence?
Yes. Going back to when I first went in, I'll never forget the day I went down to get on the bus to go to Sacramento. My folks were there, naturally, all of them, and my sisters and my mother were crying. And I looked at my dad, who was always a tough little fellow. He was leaning up against the side of the bus, and he was crying. He was sad because I was leaving to go into the Army. But all in all, I was willing to go. I was glad to go do what I could for my country. But it was a sad thing to leaving home after all those years, being close to my family.
And I can feel and see the emotion that's in you right now as you recall that day in Sacramento. And that is a powerful thing. We're talking to Lloyd Evans of Madera, served in World War II in the 89th Infantry Division. We talked about getting into the service. And you talked about going to Fort Ord, getting your shots. What about taking some shots? Did you get some rifle training there, some infantry training? What kind of things were they doing with you?
Just basically the preliminary things, getting us ready for basic training, getting all of the preliminary things taken care of. Then we were sent out to Camp Robertson, Arkansas, for our basic training. So after, I was only in Fort Ord about a week, I think 6 days, and then they sent us to Little Rock, Arkansas, for our basic training at Camp Robertson. So that's where I took my basic training, Camp Robertson.
Was everyone nice to you? Did they treat you real well? Never made you do anything you didn't want to do?
Oh, yeah, they were nice. Everybody's always nice to you.
I was trying to go with a little sarcasm there. I figured they were kind of tough on you and trying to whip you into shape.
No, they weren't tough on us.
Had you realized at this point what kind of job you were going to have in the Army and what duties you would hold?
No, I didn't. I took basic infantry training in Camp Robertson. So I had no idea what I would do, because at the end of 2 months, when my basic training was over, I was sent to Camp Carson, Colorado. They were just starting a new division, the new 89th Division. The camp wasn't even completed yet. They were still doing some building on it. But after 2 months, that's where I went. And from there, I took my other training that we did after I arrived at Camp Carson.
So you were drafted in August of 1942.
Yes.
But it wouldn't be until January of 1945 that you actually got across the Atlantic and into the European theater?
That's right. We stayed in the States for 28 months.
Did you start to wonder if you'd ever be heading overseas?
No, I felt I would be going several different times. I might need to explain that.
Feel free.
I was in Camp Carson. Took training. We had desert training. Different kinds of training in Camp Carson.
Desert training makes you think they're sending me to North Africa.
That's what we thought. Anyway, then we left Camp Carson. We went to Louisiana on maneuvers.
Mm-hmm.
Down in the swamplands of Louisiana. We were there 3 months. They loaded us on troop trains, sent us to California, out north of Camp Roberts, the Hunter League Military Reservation, for mountain training. So, we're going to the mountains.
The military couldn't make up their mind what to do with you.
So, when that maneuver was over, they put us in a little base camp back at a place called Holon, west of King City. And we all thought we were going probably go to the Pacific somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And my folks lived in Madera. My wife.
You were married already?
I married when I was in Camp Carson, Colorado.
All right.
I got an 8-day furlough and went to Alabama and got my little young bride. And
so you had met her on one of your military assignments?
Pardon?
You met your wife on one of your assignments for the military?
No, I'm sorry. I should have said this before. I had known her before I went in the Army.
All right. All right.
In fact, we were engaged before we went in the Army, before I went in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
So I was over at Hunter Liggett. She was in Alabama. Our first little baby had been born already, and she was 5 weeks old.
Mm.
I was going to the Pacific, I thought. So my wife brought the baby on a train, came to Madera, where my folks live. I got a couple days off, came over to Madera to see her. But what actually happened, instead of sending us to the Pacific, they sent everyone, all privates, all PFCs, and all corporals, they sent them out to overseas divisions, units, as replacements.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept the rest of us as cadre. And they said, we're shipping you to, taking you to North Carolina to form a new division. So there my wife was with a little 5-week-old baby. So my dad and I went to Fresno from Madera. I bought an old 36 model Ford car.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine and his wife and my wife and I, we got a, what they call it, a delay en route. And we drove through to North Carolina.
Mm.
And that's a big story all in itself. Anyway, we arrived there. We started this new division, getting new recruits coming in. And we stayed there from May until 1st of January. And that's when we shipped overseas. As a new division, we left Camp Butner, went to Camp Miles Standish, Massachusetts, and from there we shipped out of Boston Harbor for overseas.
Boy, it's quite the journey to get to that point, having seen most of the country by then and now having a wife and a baby to think about as you headed overseas. We're going to catch our first commercial break here, but when we come back, we're going to talk to Lloyd Evans about what he experienced on that trip across the Atlantic, and then once he got to the European continent, what kinds of things he faced and had to endure. He has a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star that he's going to have to explain to us by the time this program is over, and we'll have more with Lloyd Evans when Hometown Heroes continues today on News Talk 580 KMJ.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
As our caissons go rolling along, we'll keep Hometown Heroes rolling along on this Sunday here on News Talk 580 KMJ, performed there by the local Sounds of Freedom Band, which you can hear playing at the opening ceremonies of the Fresno Veterans Day Parade on Tuesday. That'll get started at 11 a.m., and I hope that you'll all attend the largest Veterans Day Parade on the West Coast. Time to continue today with World War II Army veteran Lloyd Evans, who served in the 89th Infantry Division. He told us about all his training, almost 3 years stateside before he finally shipped overseas. at the end of 1944, beginning of 1945, leaving behind his young wife and a very young child. How old was your daughter when you left for Europe?
She was 9 months old.
How hard was that for you to kiss them goodbye and get on that ship?
That was very difficult. Very difficult.
Did that, I know you had plenty to fight for. You've already said how much it meant to you to go and fight for your country and fight for freedom. But to kiss them goodbye and have that mental image in your mind as you headed overseas, did that give you a little extra motivation, not just to go and fight, but to come home?
Yes, it did.
What was that like, heading across the Atlantic? By this time, the U-boat threat was long gone, so I imagine it was a fairly uneventful trip across the pond?
We sailed out of Boston Harbor on a Liberty ship, the Marine Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in a large convoy, of course, but the U-boats and our destroyers followed us to the sides, escorted us, in other words, mm-hmm. across. We had a couple of U-boat alerts.
Really? Okay.
While we were going over, and it kept us all awake, of course, but very stormy. That little boat was giving us a lot of problems, but...
And you probably hadn't spent much time on the open seas before.
No, never. And never forget one night, I was sergeant of the guard, and we had to had our sentries placed at the doors of the ship, had them blacked out so there's no lights could shine out, and I go to the check the sentries. They would be sick, vomiting in their helmets or whatever, seasick. And I'll never forget the captain. He came to me and he said, let's go back to the back of the ship and check the sentry that's on the back of the ship. So we went out on deck, and the boat was rocking. The waves were flashing over the deck. And he was a large man, about 6'2", weighed 195 or 200 pounds. I was 175 pounds, and as we headed to the back of the ship, he took hold of me and held on to me. And I thought, man, we're all going over the top of this, over the side of this ship. But we made it and inspected the guard. The screws were coming out of the water back in the back and going, shaking the whole ship. Anyway, it was quite a frightening experience, but after 9 days, we made it over to France.
Those are some rocky seas. And you guys ended up, you landed at Le Havre, do I have that right?
Le Havre, yes.
And that was right when Camp Lucky Strike, which would be such an outpost for POWs, was just getting started, I understand.
Camp Lucky Strike and Philip Morris and 20 Grand, they were the cigarette camps, they called them. And they were just being, weren't completed yet. They were just in the process of being completed and didn't have the gravel down in the streets and all yet. It's still muddy and sloppy and cold and wet. I'll never forget that. It was a cold, not frightening, but a cold experience for us.
The frightening would come, though, right?
Pardon?
The frightening experiences were still to come, and you'd have a few of those,
that's
too.
That's right. It's still to come.
What was your first taste of combat in Europe? And here you'd been in the Army for almost 3 years.
Well, we left France. We went up through Luxembourg. Some real experiences on the way up to the little kids coming when the troop train is stopped. We'd fall out for chow, and the little kids come in their wooden shoes and little legs blue from the cold, and we would, most of us would go hungry and give them our food. But anyway, we went up through Luxembourg, some minor little skirmishes going through.
And what are your duties at this point? What is Uncle Sam expecting of you?
Individually?
Right.
I was a platoon guide of an infantry platoon. You have the platoon leader, platoon sergeant, platoon guide.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a platoon guide. I was a staff sergeant. And that was my position. So we left France, went up through Luxembourg, out through the forest, and we'd see where the units had been before, and dead German soldiers lying all over the hills.
Welcome to war.
Welcome to war. And then we came to the Moselle River. We were on the west bank for a couple of days. Now I remember they sent me with a patrol down to scout out the river banks to see if I could see any German troops or anything down there. And then on the March 16, the morning of March 16, 1945, we made the crossing in the little assault boats under cover of darkness. So that's when our real combat started.
Describe that for me. How did you experience that? What was the first signal to you that, uh-oh, this is going to be dicey. This is going to be pretty scary and pretty intense.
Well, it was scary, just the thoughts of crossing, because we really didn't know what was on the other side.
And it's dark. You can't see anything.
See, you can expect anything, but and crossing the river in the darkness. Incidentally, we had to have our weapons all unloaded in case we might shoot each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we arrived on the east bank. We made it across safely on the east bank, and we reassembled, loaded our weapons, of course. And our objective was to secure the high ground on the east side of the river. So that was frightening, too. We didn't know what was in the high ground. But I'll never forget our officer in charge of our platoon told us, get in a column of twos and let's go. That's just the way he said it. Column of twos, let's go. So we went a little ways, and it was beginning to get daylight. I turned around, I gave the signal for the fellas to get in the diamond formation,
mm-hmm.
spread out. The officer told me, I'll have you court-martialed. Of course, I knew he wouldn't because he had threatened me before. Anyway.
And why did he say that? Because he wanted you to stay in the two lines?
I knew that if the enemy would fire on us with automatic weapons or something, it would get us all.
Mm-hmm. So you wanted to spread out.
So I wanted to spread out.
Mm-hmm.
We went about 100 yards, and five German soldiers jumped up out of their machine gun nest with their hands in the air. They had run out of ammunition.
Mm.
They didn't have ammunition, so they were surrendering, but they had a machine gun there. If we would have been in a column of twos, and they would have had ammunition,
would have just mowed you down.
Mowed us down. Anyway, we secured the high ground. Our company did. Company commander told me, he said, take five men and go down south to contact G Company, who was crossing the river at a curve.
And you're E Company, right?
I was in E Company, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Go contact G Company. It's down about a whole 3/4 mile to this curve in the river, bend in the river. And so that's what I did. I asked for volunteers, and they all volunteered. They had no problem getting them to go with me, five fellows.
They must have thought highly of you to do that, because I thought the rule was you never volunteer for anything in the Army.
They all volunteered right there. That's right. And so we started down the mountainside. About a half a mile down, we came to a vineyard. big boulders out in the vineyard, a pretty vineyard. Never forget it. We started receiving machine gun fire, automatic weapon fire. They were missing us. They didn't hit us, but we couldn't tell where they were firing from either.
And there's only six of you?
There's six of us.
Mm-hmm.
So we got behind a large boulder out in the middle of that vineyard. I called on my walkie-talkie and told my captain we were pinned down. He said, stay where you are for further instructions. And that's the last I heard because my walkie-talkie went out. After about an hour, we managed to get out of there. I guess they had either run out of ammunition or withdrew. And we went down, contacted G Company. Went on down the north bank of the river with G Company down through the town of Boulay and off, a little place called Merle.
I don't want to make you lose your train of thought here, but you kind of just went right past that, and I want to get back to it. You're hiding behind a boulder with five other guys. There's a machine gun that you have no idea where it is. It's been firing at you. That doesn't sound like, and you kind of just made it sound like it was no big deal and you guys moved on, but I imagine that was a pretty tense experience while you waited to see what was going to happen.
Oh, sure it was, but we were rough, tough soldiers, you know.
How long would you say you had to wait before you were able to move on?
I would say about an hour's time before we would try to get out and they start firing again. Then they eventually didn't fire anymore, so we just took our chances and went out.
And that was your call of when to go?
Yes.
That's a lot of responsibility to bear there.
Yes.
So you've already had one situation where you come upon a machine gun nest, they're out of ammo, they surrender to you. Here's another one where they're shooting at you, but they're gone all of a sudden, too.
Yes.
So it sounds like you've dodged a couple bullets there already.
Yes.
No pun intended.
No.
Well, and you started to say where you went from there. I'm going to hold you up there because we need to get a couple more commercials in, but we'll pick the story up there when we come back and learn about what else Lloyd Evans experienced there in March of 1945, how he earned a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star, and what he remembers still today at the age of 87. Lloyd Evans of Madera, our guest today on Hometown Heroes here on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Freedom. You are listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
I'll be with you in apple blossom time.
Sisters, I'll be with you in Apple Blossom Time by personal request of our guest today, Lloyd Evans, as he was halfway across the world fighting in the 89th Infantry in Europe while his wife and daughter were back here in the States. We left off after a couple of intense encounters there near the Moselle River, and you're leading five other men, so there are six of you wandering through the countryside here in Europe, still cold. Conditions, I guess, in the spring of 1945? What was the weather like?
It wasn't real cold. It's weather just about like we're having here today.
So not too bad.
Nice weather.
So you described the beautiful vineyard, which is a little contrast to the horrors of war that you had experienced. But pick it up where you left off. You led those other five men down to a couple neighboring towns.
Okay, we went down and we contacted G Company along the north bank of the Fresno River, the Moselle River.
Would have been nice if you were back home near the Fresno River.
Anyway, the little villages
They were beautiful little places. And these vineyards on the hillsides, real beautiful country.
Mm-hmm.
I have pictures of it at home that... Just a real beautiful country. And we enjoyed the scenery as we were traveling through,
mm-hmm.
walking through. We did most everything by foot in those days. And we didn't have the personnel carriers that they have now.
Sure.
So we were going by foot.
Well, and that's why they make you hike 25 miles in basic training, right? To get ready for that.
Yes. Anyway, but it was a beautiful country. And as we went down the north bank of the Moselle River, along with the G Company, who was doing the clearing of the village,
mm-hmm.
we just tied in with them. And went along. If you have time, I'd like to tell one little experience that happened that stands out in my mind forever.
The stage is yours.
We came to a cross street, and a Red Cross nurse came running out and grabbed me, pulled me, pointing across the river. And I looked out in the middle of the river, just about a soldier was out there, water about waist deep, head bandaged up and his hands in the air, and he was calling for help, a German soldier, because our 1st Battalion were pushing the Germans down on the other side of the river.
Mm-hmm.
I told our interpreter, Eric Lazaroff, tell her we are just an attachment here. We're not with this unit. Get the next unit and they'll take care of it. Next unit was a machine gun section. The nurse told them, appointed. I'll never forget, they set up the machine gun and moved the man down in the river.
Mm.
So that was a terrible experience to see someone, even though he was our enemy, with his hands up.
He was surrendering, sure.
Hands up and bandages on his head.
And you were willing to help, but it wasn't your... call. It wasn't,
My call. It wasn't my responsibility there.
Oh, I could see how that would stick with you.
Anyway, I spoke to the sergeant. I said, why did you do that? He said, well, maybe those were fake bandages. Maybe he just wanted to get across and do us some harm, you know. I could understand that, too.
You never know. There were a lot of dirty tricks like that.
But that's something I'll never forget. Never forget.
No, it sounds horrifying. But when they hit you, it's a little even more horrifying. And that was going to come for you not too long after that point, right?
Down the line, about 4 or 5 hours, yes.
Describe that for me. What happened?
All right, we were moved on down the Moselle River. We came to a little small village by the name of Merle, M-E-R-L-E.
Mm-hmm.
There I saw my battalion commander. I reported to him and told him my walkie-talkie was out, wouldn't work, and I had lost contact with my company. He pointed to a town about a mile and a half down the riverbank. He said, see that town down there? He said, your company has already gone. They've secured that town. They've taken that town, so you go down and join them. So, we went down this little road along the river.
So this is just the 6 of you again, trying to reunite with your company?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Went down the bank, river bank. And as we got near the little town, we could see the German soldiers that our 1st Battalion was pushing east. They were crossing the river. The river made a curve. Headed back south, they were crossing that river into this little town. We said, oh, something isn't right here. So we arrived at the end of the edge of town, and some man came out. Oh, welcome, he said. We're all prepared for you, some German man. We've been waiting for you. We're waiting. Welcome. We're waiting for you. I told the fellow, something's wrong. We don't go in. We stay right here. They had a big archway over the street. So we stayed there. Investigated a little winery that was right there close by for an hour or so. And about an hour and a half, our company came marching down the road that we had just come down. So if we would have entered that town, I wouldn't be talking with you today.
So he was trying to suck you into a trap.
Yes, and the point is, my battalion commander didn't know where his company was, where his troops were. He'd lost them, lost contact with them. He thought they were down there. They weren't. Anyway, so if you want me to continue now?
Yeah, I want to hear, I think our listeners do too, about the events that led to your being injured.
Okay. So my company arrived, marching down the street. Our third platoon was in the lead. So I told them what had happened. I told them about seeing these troops come across, these German troops come across the river into the town. And so he told the fellas, get in a column of twos. Right down the street. Well, we just went a little short ways, and the Germans started firing at us, naturally. So everybody took cover wherever they could find it. Fortunately, no one was hit. The bullets bounced off the street. No one was hit. Anyway, we started fighting, house to house, building to building. Anyway, about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we came to a cross street. And we were pinned down. We couldn't move. Now, pinned down means we couldn't go because too much fire
is coming in. Yep.
So we finally thought we had determined where the fire was coming from. Main portion of it. So I yelled to the fellows, cover me. And they knew what to do. So they put everything they had into this one place while I worked my way up the side of the street, about 3/4 of a block. I tried to break the door down to this building. I couldn't. We didn't have those little battering rams like they have now. I tried them with my shoulder, with my weapon,
the butt of your rifle?
Butt of my rifle and everything. And I couldn't break it down. While I was in the process of doing this, some German across the street with a burp gun.
And for those of you who don't know what a burp gun is, that's a Schmeisser submachine gun that can fire off.
It's a small little machine
gun. Right, but it has a muzzle velocity that sends shots out faster than you can.
It goes burp.
Right.
Like this.
And can saw you in half in a matter of seconds.
In my pack, I had a little light pack on my back. I had an anti-tank grenade. I had two hand grenades. I had a white phosphorus smoke grenade. Well, this fellow laced 7 bullets right up my side, through the seam of my trousers, through the seam of my shirt. One of them hit the little pack I had on my back and hit the white phosphorus smoke grenade. Covered me with smoke. Now I call that providence. You call it what you like, but that's what I call it.
Well, and let's be clear here for our listeners. You told us all the grenades that were in there.
Yes.
It hit the one grenade that wasn't going to kill you, right?
hit the white phosphorus smoke grenade.
If it had hit one of those other grenades, you wouldn't be here talking to me.
If it would have hit this anti-tank grenade, it would have blown me all the way back across the Moselle River. Or a hand grenade would have blown me apart.
But this gave you a smoke screen.
Covered me with smoke while I made a hasty retreat back around the corner. One of the bullets hit the metal part of my bayonet sheath that was on my side of my belt and ricocheted into my body, went in against my spine. So I broke the 100-yard dash record going back around the corner. The medic came to attend me, a fellow named Pascoe. I'll never forget his name either. He put bandages on me, patched me up, and I went back with my unit. And along about sundown time, we secured the town. Captain came along, Captain Riegel. He said, "What's the matter with you?" I guess he saw me kind of dragging my leg. And I told him, and he said to go back down to the battalion aid station, which was back down the road a ways.
Mm-hmm.
I went back there, and they checked me over, sent me by ambulance back across the river on a pontoon bridge that our engineers had put across, and back to different stations during the night.
To get treated for these pretty impressive wounds that you were dealing with.
Yes.
I have to cut you off there one more time to catch our final commercial break.
Yes.
But when we come back, we're going to talk about the healing process and really continue to revel in how you survived that. It is pretty incredible that Lloyd Evans was able to survive that more than 60 years ago. This is Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Now, more Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. I've done it again. I've let the show go where I'm running out of time and got to squeeze in some really important information in the last 3 or 4 minutes here with Lloyd Evans. He talked about being injured. What an incredible story of being shot with a burp gun, hit 7 times, one of them into a grenade in his backpack, but it was a white phosphorus grenade that set up a smoke screen instead of blowing him to smithereens. So he is here with us talking about it today. He talked about being sent for treatment. He ended up in a hospital in Luxembourg for 2 days, then in Verdun, France, at another hospital for 35 days. And Lloyd, while you were there, there was another big piece of news that that you caught wind of in the hospital.
Yes, yes, our President Roosevelt died during the time I was in the hospital.
What did that mean to you?
Well, it was a shock, and it meant a lot because I thought a lot of our president.
And you would have to go back to your unit after all of those injuries and still, now, hit 7 times. Were they able to get all those bullets out?
No. Only one bullet penetrated my body.
Uh-huh.
And it is still there. It was so close to my spine that they wouldn't remove it. And it is still there, even though I've had back surgery and everything since.
You're still carrying that reminder.
It's still there.
Mm-hmm. The ever-present reminder of World War II. And they would, after you healed up, they sent you back to your unit. So here you are. You've got a Purple Heart. You'd end up with a Bronze Star for what you and your unit did. And you're about to go back into battle in Czechoslovakia here in May of 1945.
Yes. Our orders were to go into Czechoslovakia. Next morning, we were all set to go, and we received word, hold your positions. So this we did until mid-morning, word came down that the war was over. And what a great feeling that was, to know that the war was over in that part of the world.
And what that meant for you was once you got enough points, you ended up not having to go to Japan, which a lot of people were concerned they might do. You got enough points to come home, so you got to see your wife and daughter again after all of those harrowing experiences. I imagine that was a pretty special moment for you.
Yes, I came home down to Fort MacArthur. They told us, I came in on the 23rd day of December. They said no more discharges until after Christmas.
Oh.
So they gave us a pass to go into L.A. So instead of going to L.A., we all went AWL and went home. So I arrived at home about 2 o'clock in the morning. My wife had the car parked by the door, so if she needed to get out, she could get out. And she had the door open, so I got in the car and started blowing the car horn. Woke her up. My mother was there with her. Anyway, what a time we did have. What an experience to come home. But I'd like to say my little wife, she was a real little trooper through all this. Probably a better soldier than I am. And God led us through everything. I see you leading all the way. God is good.
Amen to that. And you had one child before you went overseas. But if you hadn't come back, there are a lot of other people that wouldn't be here today. You have 10 grandchildren and 13 great-grandchildren?
Yes. 14, actually, I guess it is now. We have just had another one.
Don't stop now. Like you said, God is good, and He has blessed you, and I feel blessed and privileged to have had this time to share with you today. Thank you so much, Lloyd, for your service to our country, for your dedication to freedom, and for sharing those stories with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. God bless.
God bless you. That is our show for today. We'll be back with another edition of Hometown Heroes next week here on News Talk 580 KMJ.